And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast live from a now messy hotel room in San Francisco, California, where I'm thrilled to be joined by one of my regular podcast guests, the great Chris Herring of 538.com. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm good. A little tired.
I think we all are.
Went out a little too late last night after the game.
Daredevil.
Couple of beverages were had. The second one may not have been necessary, but it was fun. This is only my ninth finals, I think, as a full-time NBA writer. But I think it's the weirdest. So we're almost halfway through. We're three out of max seven. So let's just say we're halfway through-ish. The whole series is going to change again.
Right.
In game four, whenever KD comes back. It feels like, so game one, Toronto pulls away. Kyle Lowry hits a fake dagger at the end, whatever. Game two, exciting Warriors response. Like, that was an exciting game. The Iguodala shot at the end. It was like a good, fun, like, that's a gutsy championship team. Last night, letdown. Just a letdown game. Like, it was exciting. We can talk about it, but it was like, you never had the sense that the Warriors are going to win.
No.
It was 7-8, and every time they got it to 7.
It's literally every time they got to 7.
They would hit, something would happen. The right. Raptors would hit a big shot. There was that one sequence when Cousins stripped Marc Gasol in the third quarter, I think. It's all blending together.
I know.
It was the third quarter, and yeah. they ran fast break, I think, would have cut it to 5. Cousins gets a layup, probably gets fouled. Or falls.
Oh, over. Where he fell and he yeah. complained. And then they got
Kawhi
a three.
Hits a three and yeah. it's back up to 10. And then Andre answered that. There were just like a million. It just wasn't, and like without Klay.
But that's what it was. There were the 6-point spurts that the Warriors were getting. Like, oh, here come the Warriors. But the rest of it that you would have gotten from a Klay or from a Durant just wasn't there. And you weren't going to get a sustained run from Curry himself because they just weren't going to let him get those looks. And nobody else. I mean, I think a few of us have had this conversation at this point. When Quinn Cook is like hands down your second best shooter, who, by the way, he had a really nice, I went back and watched the game. He had a really nice step back move.
Quinn Cook does not lack for confidence.
No, I remember there was that, was it that shot last year that he didn't take that everybody was like up in arms about?
Yes, that was against the Rockets when I think it was the same play that Chris Paul got hurt.
I love the confidence he has. I mean, he's a good shooter and he's probably, again, their next best shooter without Klay there. And definitely without Durant there, but they just don't have enough guys to really, the runs are harder to come by unless you're able to run in transition. And even those last night, Draymond really struggled around the rim. Obviously Cousins did. I think it was 1-for-7. But that play where he kind of was on the floor and, I haven't really referred to, the old DeMarcus, but it was a frustrating game for him to say the least. I think that you can't have moments that linger when you're trying to eat into a 15-point deficit where you complain there and then you give up a transition three in part because of it.
He did fall over. Even if he didn't complain, I don't think it would have made a difference. Like the same thing happened to Steph at one point where he missed a, I can't remember if it was a floater or a jump shot. He fell over and kind of complained
He complained
bit,
too.
And Danny Green went down and hit a transition three.
Right.
Toronto, 13 corner threes in the game. Just way too many corner yeah. threes. A lot of them on bad breakdowns we can talk about. But there was just like, there was some juice for Curry and like how much is he actually going to be able to do. And like the crowd was into it, I thought, the whole game, but it just never felt, it didn't have the electricity of a finals game because of who wasn't playing. And it just had the sense of like the Raptors are really good. They know they should win. They came out and established a 10-point lead right away. So there was like no suspense about who's going to play with the lead. And it just sort of like went on and on. And so after three games, it feels kind of like a weird and blah series, but we're also set up now for an awesome finish with the Warriors getting – Klay is, I think, for sure going to play tomorrow.
Right.
KD, we'll see. I've heard different things. Like, now here come the Warriors down 2-1. Back's not quite up against the wall, but getting there. And the cavalry is coming, and you have this Toronto team that did its job last night. I think they had to win that game last night.
If they lose that, they're in trouble. I mean, because you figure Klay would be healthy enough to play in game four. And I don't know. I always feel like maybe I overreact a little bit to those. You really needed to get that game sort of games. Frankly, they don't always mean everything. I felt like Toronto had a game like that to start the Milwaukee series. And they obviously fell behind two games in the Milwaukee series and still
That's
came
a
back
great
and
point.
Won.
Game one felt like a game, but that was
where,
one
where
they,
Lowry had like 30 and, you know, so you have moments like that, but I don't know. I feel
but
like
that felt that way because of what happened in the game.
Right.
This felt that way because of who wasn't playing in
and
the
you knew
game.
You weren't going to get another opportunity like and, that, especially and, on the road.
And I thought, I was hesitant to say it's a must win because honestly, Clay and KD could come back and get injured again. They could be at 60% and not all that helpful. Like, you don't know how the series is going to look, but I do think if they had lost that game, it would have been a gut punch loss. It would have been for like sure. a super loss. And so they came out and did their job, but now we're set up for, I think, a really exciting finish. A Toronto team that's really good, has the edge, but knows, okay, like the real team is coming. And if Durant can come back, I don't believe the Warriors have played a single second in this series with Draymond at center, unless you count the Jarebko, Draymond, whoever's the center there, which Jarebko.
Jarebko was horrible.
Although I've been told it's Jarebko, actually. Jarebko or Jarebko.
Is it horrible that I'm thinking that I don't really care how to pronounce his name after the way he played last night?
I think that's rude.
It's pretty rude. That's rude. A little mean. Okay.
He's just not good enough to play in the finals.
Yeah.
Really. Unless he'll have a game
still
where
put
he
him
makes
on the court
a,
in the fourth.
Yeah, a random jump shot, and you'll say, okay, they made a random jump shot.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen their best, and if Durant can go, we're gonna see the real Warriors right. at some point, which is Draymond Green at center for heavy doses. And like now, a lot of the stuff you're doing, exploiting Cousins, attacking Bogut in the pick and roll, trying to play. I thought the Raptors were much better playing a little bit of mismatch basketball here or there, gets a lot harder when they can put Clay, Iguodala, Draymond, and Durant on the floor sure. and switch a lot of stuff. That gets a lot more interesting.
That was why I felt like, cause at one point, you know, the person I was sitting next to last night kind of said, here they come. And I said, I don't think it's there because they want to go up tempo, but that's really hard to do when Steph is playing as much as he's playing tonight. It's really hard to do that when Draymond's playing as much as he's playing tonight. And the idea of going small and forcing some of these guys off the court that give you so much trouble, you can't really do that with, you can go Draymond at center if you want to, but there's still no shooting threats there.
No, and then you take Clay out. I mean, they had this lineup available to them with Clay that I was actually a little surprised they had never tried. Just Curry, Clay, Iguodala, Livingston, Draymond. That's like, it's not the death lineup. It's
as close as you're going to get.
It's not even the coma lineup where Livingston replaces Iguodala.
Right.
But it's there. Now you take one of those guys out, like Clay. Now you just don't have a playable
Clay.
You just don't have a playable lineup anymore
because right. you still are comfortable at that point throwing two. Because at a certain point, they started throwing two guys at Curry really aggressively. And they, what's interesting, one of the things I found really interesting about last night is that so many of us, you know, I think rightly point out you need a big performance from Cousins if Clay is not going to play. This is a chance for him to step up. Now, I thought back to game two, you know, he played so well in game two, you're looking forward to seeing what he can do in game three. Did he get overextended in game two a little bit for how recently he'd come back? Did he play too long? I don't necessarily know if he played too long, but I think it gave hope that he could provide a little bit more, obviously, than what he gave yesterday. But because he draws so much more attention, he can't go beneath the free throw line and really not have anyone defend him. I feel like that's one of the reasons in some ways that Bogut actually works better for them or was working better for them last night in a way is that you don't hesitate to come off Bogut necessarily if it means throwing a second or maybe even a third guy at Steph or someone like that or making sure that you get back to Draymond off the screen and roll. You don't do that with Cousins. And so Cousins isn't able to finish the way he's been able to finish before.
Well, he can barely get off the ground.
Right. And that's the thing is like he's just not quick enough off the ground. And so him being defended one-on-one in the post, he's not able to create a mismatch the way he would be if he's healthy. And I don't think it's happenstance that Bogut has actually kind of been a better mesh and a better fit at getting stuff at the rim than Cousins has.
Well, and that's the, and Bogut has played well. Mm-hmm. How many minutes did he play last night? I have the box score up. He played 22 minutes. I mean, that's a lot of minutes for Andrew Bogut.
It's a lot.
And Looney's gone. Jordan Bell, Jordan Bell just doesn't, there's just something missing. He just doesn't, he's such a mess on defense in bad games. Like he got caught in between on Lowry a couple of times. Like, am I hedging? Am I trapping? Oh, now I'm just in no man's, oh, he's around me. And Lowry had a great game.
Oh, I remember that one play there. Was Bell the one guarding there when, Draymond tried to double Kawhi and got there really late? and Kawhi just went right around Bell and dunked on him. And I think that was Bell.
That was that play which they should run more, even when Kawhi comes off a pin down from the center mm-hmm. and there's no one else on that side of the floor, and if he attacks right away, he either has a head start, or that one they switched because Draymond fell behind the play.
Right.
And then he just roasted Jordan Bell. Yeah. Kawhi looked much better last night physically than he did in game two.
That's what a couple people were saying, and it always kind of takes me a second time to go back and watch to really pick up on it. But it's interesting too, because he really didn't look great in the first half, and I felt like, you know, he's, you can't watch what he's done this postseason and say he hasn't improved as a passer. He still has moments where he holds onto the ball too long, or I kind of feel like he's a little bullheaded about, trying to go through people because he feels like he can have a second guy come at him and still just hold the ball over.
Because
people.
He literally knocked Kevon Looney back 25 feet with a shoulder check.
Couple times.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's interesting now, because I've seen a couple people mention it, I've always said this about superstar players. LeBron, Durant, especially in person. When you're watching games in person, sometimes you can lose track of numbers and stats. But all of a sudden, you look up at the end of the third quarter, midway through the fourth, how the hell did LeBron just get to 32, 11, and 7? And it doesn't feel like he's having a particularly good game.
That was LeBron's entire season with the Lakers. It was like, wait, he's averaging 28, 8, and 8?
Right, right.
Okay.
No, but that's, I've always kind of used that as a sign of a superstar where they get there and you don't remember them getting there. It didn't feel like they had any particular spurt. And then you look at Kawhi, like I said, had a rough first half, where he had a couple, offensive foul calls. I think he had a couple.
I hated that one on Draymond. The pass and crash. So it's such a bogus.
It's a tough
call.
One, but he had it. He also had plays that
was a makeup call too. That was a makeup call because that was right after, Quinn Cook just kind of like, Quinn Cook and Lowry just kind of like bumped each other.
Was a weird call.
And Lowry flopped. Although Kyle will say he'll never flop. And Steph hit a three that they had to wave off, I think. And so I think that the Draymond was a makeup call.
Might have been a makeup.
Last night was not a good, officiating.
It was
game.
Bad. The other thing I picked up on watching the game again, and in real time, the 3 second delays and stuff on like calls where the shot has gone up and there's a rebound and then there's a whistle. And it was,
well, and they missed that goaltend.
There were two goaltends, yeah, I thought.
The
they
one,
missed
which I thought was in real time from my angle, I thought was a great recovery block by Ibaka. No, it turned out the ball hit the backboard and then Ibaka blocked it.
There were a couple big calls they didn't have there. I also felt like they missed Steph looked like he carried the ball clearly on a really cool shot that he made. But
you know who else had a bad moment? One of the minority owners of the Warriors apparently had a bad moment. Mark Stevens, I think his name is, who's now been banned from the finals.
How about that?
Maybe we should ban him for more than the finals. Like, what is he? What? So they announced today, the Warriors announced today he's banned from the finals. Or they're banned is whatever. He's not going to be attending the finals. Like, what is he doing? So Kyle Lowry dives for a loose ball, which is what you're supposed to do. Right. That's like what we heroicize. Okay. And what is that, an inconvenience for you? Like, this man has landed around you, and
even
that's,
if it is, you've got the privilege of sitting in seats right there. You want to be close to the action. Everybody like
what,
wants
what
that.
Are you annoyed by?
I don't know what that was. And the crazy thing, again, being at the game, all I noticed as they showed the replay in real time and everything on television, I noticed the woman go flying back who was sitting in the second row as a result of the impact from Lowry.
Kyle went in there. Kyle went
full
hard.
Bore. And I remember saying and sitting next to people saying, like, did you see that? Sitting next to Dan Devine, said, did you see that? Like that this woman just went just kind of completely – wouldn't have surprised me if someone kind of caught whiplash that way. But then it wasn't somehow – and I don't know if it was that I was just so into the game or whatever – I didn't see the shove. I knew Lowry was upset about something, and so obviously I figured just a fan said something to him. I didn't realize he'd been literally shoved or pushed by someone sitting right there. And then I was watching the replays and the game last night, and I saw Lowry's interview with Scott Van Pelt, and I was like, whoa, this was actually a real thing. And then realized that it's a part owner of the team.
That only came out this morning. How...
What are you even supposed to do about
that? What are you
that?
Doing? I don't even know what the right word is. I don't know Mark Stevens. And I, even though that action is on its face stupid, despicable, it looks incredibly entitled. I don't know how what he is like as a person other than he's obviously incredibly wealthy and gets to sit courtside. Like, what are you doing? So Kyle Lowry dives into you and you're angry about it and you push him Because what? He's in your space? Because
he went diving for a ball.
He's inconvenienced you, or you're mad your team is losing the game, or like what would possess you to – every other fan in those situations is doing two things at the same time, trying to protect themselves and also trying to like catch the player because right. that's what you do. That's a nice thing to do. I don't think I've ever seen – a fan being like, how you're in my, get out of here. Like, that's, I've never seen that happen before.
That's a strange
one. I understand why Kyle was pissed. LeBron just posted this comment on Instagram. There's no place for this in our game. And what if Lowry, and this is the what if that Richard Jefferson brought this up on Get Up that I didn't really think about because I was doing other things. Like, what if Lowry reacts? And by the way, if you're like jumbled in a crowd of people and someone like hits you, you might react. It takes some restraint to just kind of step away and be like, oh no, I'm a player. I'm in the crowd. If I react, that goes very badly.
I've always felt like it takes more restraint than we give the players credit for having. Now, I think every now and then you have something that where even if the fan is clearly in the wrong, the Westbrook issue, where he's talking
yeah,
about
get
a
that,
player's
that
wife,
was, yeah, that, like again, you're right. Like imagine if someone like just did that to you at your job. Just came up and said that to
say something
your job.
About me needing to be on my knees or something like that. I'm going
to
react.
If you went into the, if you went up to that person and clocked them right in the face, that's like a,
it would be an understood thing in so many different industries, yeah. particularly in the heat of a moment. And we're in the NBA finals at this point. Like the idea that that happened courtside with someone, not to even mention the idea of, the questions that are coming up about entitlement in general.
And I don't even care that he's an owner. Everyone's like LeBron says, you know,
I do.
Someone said, well, I care in this sense. Like people are saying, well, he's one of the owners or investors or whatever term we want to use.
Right.
So he should know better because he's in the NBA. He's probably you should know better anyway. Every human being should know better.
I just feel like the notion of entitlement when you're actually talking about an owner or a part owner of the team, it almost gets more problematic at that point when you – or shoving people. And the NBA hasn't had as many problems with this as the other leagues, but I think the NFL and stuff like that, there've been comments that people make and it just looks horrible.
Get him all the way out of the finals.
See beyond finals. Like, I don't know. It'll be real interesting as they're moving into a new arena. Can you ban a part owner from attending games or if not, you can't sit courtside. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, you get him all the way out. I don't want to see
I'm
that
not going
to
argue with
how are you going to, it's like, did you see his face too?
I did not see his face.
He's like all scrunched.
There were angles.
He's like all, yeah, there was like a vertical angle they showed on GetUp where you can, he's like all scrunched up and frowny, like, meh. It was like, why? You just dove for a loose ball. That's what you're supposed to do.
That's weird.
Anyway, enough about that dude. Get him all the way out of here. I think we're set up to have a very exciting finish. And like, it's weird to go into game four. Like, everything changes if Durant comes back. Everything. The whole, like, who Kawhi has to guard, who Durant is guarding, what the matchups
are. Use a lot
are.
More Kawhi's
it's
energy.
It's just an entirely different series. Like, Klay goes back on Lowry. If Klay's healthy, the matchups they want are Klay on Lowry and Durant on Kawhi. And then you put Draymond on the side, you do it that way. Like, we haven't seen, obviously, 1 second of that. And Klay ended up being, I think, their best defender on Kawhi and was a big reason that they won game two. And so, like, it's just a whole big question mark, but I just like the idea of, okay, this is one of the greatest basketball teams ever trying to etch further their place in history. 4 titles in 5 years, down 2-1. They've been down 2-1 in the finals before.
That first year. Yeah.
Not quite like this. They have not played a competitive finals since the 2016 one that they lost, against a team that has a vibe. Like the Raptors beating Philly and Milwaukee sort of found a collective belief like, yeah, we're good. Like, we can actually win. We can win the whole thing. I think they, at some point during that journey, it clicked into their heads of like, we are that good and Kawhi is that good. Like, this is a big challenge for the Warriors. They need everyone. And like, it's, and that becomes an awesome challenge for the Raptors who like, we just need to scrounge 2. Like, we're not down 2-1. Can we just find a way, even if they come back fully healthy, even if Durant and Klay are awesome, they're better than us, they should beat us, but that team has cold shooting nights. We're a really good team. Like, we just need to scrounge 2, right. And we got 2 remaining home games. can we dig in and it has the potential to turn from a series that's kind of been weird and bleh to really exciting.
It's definitely been weird. I don't even know if I'd call it bleh. I know what you're getting at with that. And I also thought it was really funny. One of my editors and I had a conversation earlier in the series, and I wrote like almost a traditional gamer after game two. And my editor was kind of like, well, why did you do that? Like, it's fine that you did it. But you know, people watch the game, they kind of know what happens. I was like, I don't really know what to make of the series yet. And I kind of felt like I was writing that because I didn't know what to say. And he was like, you should write something on just how weird the series has been, that you, someone that's as close to it as you are, still don't know what the hell to make of it. And that's what you wrote.
That's what I wrote. I was
like, I basically probably should have done the same thing, because it's been so weird, because we know that what we've seen in the first couple games will not be what we see at the end of the series. It's going to be really fun, I think, to watch, you know, the potential that it has at the end. I think everybody, ratings always play out this way. When a historic sort of team has its back against the wall, you know you're at least going to likely see that team's best punch. What I was thinking earlier in the series, before we got to this point, was that in some ways, if Golden State is in a good position, or if they're even in the series, getting Durant back, while you obviously want him, there's, you know, fans can talk all they want. Steve Kerr wants Kevin Durant out on the court.
Are fans talking that he doesn't?
Probably not now, but the idea, oh, they don't need him. Oh, they're better without him. 31-1. Okay. I don't care about that at this point, because my thought for a while was never that they didn't want him, but it was the idea that, like, when you get him back, when he's missed this much time, there is going to be some lopsidedness with regards to the chemistry and with regards to, like, the offensive flow. The offense runs totally differently when he's in there. But at this point, especially without Clay there, what are your other alternatives? Like, you, and for the reasons that you said before too, Kawhi all of a sudden has a much heavier burden when he has to guard Durant. Like, it's changing so many different things about the spacing. All of a sudden your rotation, which has been really thin on the wings, you've got some of that where you don't have to play your Drebko, however you pronounce it. You get away from certain things, even if your offense isn't quite in sync the way you'd love it to be if he were healthy.
And by the way, I don't think Kawhi has had a particularly good defensive series, and I think both teams were bad defensively last night, which is kind of why that was a weird game. Like, how many threes did Steph just walk into because the help was
there
too
were
low?
Four or five that just rimmed out.
Like, what are you doing? And I have to, and Golden State's defense, like, if Golden State played a good defensive game, they could have won last night. They allowed 13 corner threes, and you just start thinking through your head. We already talked about losing Danny Green in transition. Early in the game, Danny Green got a corner three off a pass from Lowry, where Steph was just, like, not paying attention.
He was
10 feet away on the baseline, just not paying attention.
And even after he hit five of them, he got one that was open at the end of the game, too.
Yeah, at least three, I remember, times where two were Draymond and one was Cousins, helping from the perimeter, just wildly gambling for steals. Or, like, Siakam was driving on Jordan Bell. And, like, Jordan Bell had it. It was fine. Like, Siakam's really good. He's going to spin his way into, like, an okay jump hook. Draymond on Lowry just sort of, like, wildly reaches down. Kyle moves a little bit, so when Draymond recovers, he recovers to the wrong place. Open three. That happened, like, three times. Cousins left somebody.
Cousins
left Gasol, and then that turned into something bad. It was like they were helping out a scheme and for no reason. Yeah. And, like, wildly. Like, normally when Draymond helps, he's very under control. He can keep track of where his guy is. He doesn't recover to the wrong place. He doesn't get, like, turned around. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the Warriors were pretty bad defensively last night. And you can sort of, like, you can understand them being off kilter because it's a weird game for them.
How much of it do you put on Clay? Because Clay is really important in that defense. How much of it do you put on him not being there?
I don't know if it's because he wasn't there for his defense. I mean, that's part of it.
But it was bad either way. I just
wonder how, like, they played almost kind of a frantic game, and I wonder if it was just because, like, they knew how hard it was going to be and how perfect they were going to have to play, and they knew how they were going to need Steph to get out and score points in transition. They just kind of played a little wildly on defense, and Cousins was terrible. Bell was terrible. Like, they were a good defensive game away. Now, if they played, they'd have to play offensively. I thought they were good. I think they put up 110 points per 100
possessions. Steph was good enough on offense.
They played well enough to win that game offensively. I thought their defense was bad and in ways that are uncharacteristic of them.
Sure. I'll take issue with one thing you said.
Take issue.
I love Siakam. He's going to have his ups. He's going to have his downs.
If you're about to disparage Pascal Siakam, I'm disparaging
Warriors defense.
You, sir, can go back to the lobby of this hotel.
I'm going back to disparage the Warriors defense. I think that they don't play him into the lane as much as they should when it seems very clear a lot of times he wants to turn toward the sideline with the spin move. And I feel like he gets to the spot he wants to get to way too often. I love his spin move. You know how all my stupid story ideas, weird story ideas with all my counting stuff. I've wanted to go back and count his spin moves, but to me, I feel like if I were to go back and do that, I'd count way more of them with him turning sideline rather than
interesting
the paint. And they don't ever take him off that hand. They don't do it enough. I'll put it that way. And I was kind of surprised in watching it how many clean spins he gets away from the defense where no one is there to help.
He had that fake spin on Draymond.
He had a really
in the
pretty
first
move.
Game that yeah. was that. Well, I, you know, honestly, one of the things that I thought really early in the game, he established. Oh, because we all know Jarebko can't guard him. Like anytime that matchup happens,
he crossed
it's
him
it's,
one time
it's
real
barbecue
bad.
Chicken or whatever people barbecue in Sweden. That's what he becomes. Barbecue whatever. I don't know. What do you? But maybe they don't barbecue anything.
I definitely
don't. I've never
know.
Been to Sweden unless you count the Stockholm airport, which is a very nice airport. So that's barbecue Swedish fish. He posted up Iguodala for a basket. He posted up Livingston for a basket. Like he established early in the game, none of these dudes can guard me. Like any mismatch I can score on, even if it doesn't look like that big of a mismatch.
Right.
And Livingston, anytime Lowry had Livingston on him, he just attacked, one-on-one, attack. He hit Van Vliet for a corner three. He hit He hit Ibaka for a floater, Gasol for a floater. He just attacked Livingston. And like those, when Kyle plays like that, they're a different team. When he attacks like that, they're a different team. And like, if the Warriors are healthy, those guys just play less. Like there are just less of those opportunities to find very easy opportunistic offense. But I credit to Siakam, particularly early in the game, for going out and establishing like, oh no, I'm a stud. Like you can't switch these dudes on me.
Yeah. No, I liked that about him. And I mean, I feel like there are times I think some people in the earlier series where they were kind of throwing defenders on him that we're daring him to shoot, that he can be hesitant at times. And I feel like that's really one of the biggest differences with this team is that sometimes the trust in their own shots is just not there. Whether it's Siakam, Lowry goes through bouts like that. We've seen Gasol, I think, be part of a new team where he has the freedom and almost the green light to take open shots. We saw it in game one. That one play where he hesitated for like 3 seconds.
A little tap
like,
dance.
You're going to let me shoot this? Should I shoot this? Are you really going to let me shoot this? Okay, I'll shoot it. And then he's clearly capable of doing it. It seemed like, you know, and there was obviously people harking back to what Nurse had told the players with regards to let it rip. Lowry doing that and shooting as well as he did, I mean, that's a different sort of player. Well, we've watched him go scoreless in this postseason at times.
He had 1-3 over Livingston. Off no action. He just caught the ball.
Just shot it.
And just was like, you know okay. what? I'm going up.
Between that and the turnaround jumper that he had, was it on Draymond in the middle of the... That shot was beautiful.
If I wrote this once, actually, in a 10 Things a couple years ago. Like, some guys, when you think, okay, that you know what their signature move is. Like, if you close your eyes, you think of one move. Mm-hmm. Lowry is one of those guys, he said, it's actually hard to think of, like, that may be it. That spinning jump shot where he fades back and, like, clears so much space. That may be his signature
shot. That shot fell right through. That shot was beautiful. And that was kind of, it felt like a kill shot to some extent last night. I kept thinking that this shot, you know, Danny Green 3 or this one, and then the Warriors, I think they cut it to 10 at one point. But to me, that one was kind of the shot where I was kind of like, all right, you guys don't have anything for them tonight. They're just going to take this game from you.
That was set up by, I don't remember off the top of my head, but there was some, they did a really good job last night of varying up their pick and rolls and slipping out of screens and when they got switches, attacking fast. And Nick Nurse and I were talking about this after the game. You know, he said to me, we've had a habit of sort of getting these switches and then backing it out and letting the Warriors load up on us. And tonight we just sort of like when the gap opened up, we went, and that's how we have to play. But they would like, there were some Siakam Lowry pick and rolls where Lowry slipped and set the screen. There was one Kawhi Pascal handling the ball, Kawhi screening, he slipped out and hit a three from the top of the key, kind of surprised Draymond. Like, they just were, like, they Kawhi and Kyle, they haven't really developed a rhythm on the pick and roll, and Kyle is a great screener.
Yeah.
Like, he had a great chemistry with DeMar. And last night, they found a little bit of a rhythm with Kyle mixing up, hitting dudes, and a couple of times zipping out, not setting the screen, zipping out over towards the sideline and getting them in rotation and confusing them. And Kyle and I talked a little bit about after the game about sort of finding a rhythm with Kawhi. They just, when they mix it up like that, they're really, really hard to guard. When it's not like as great as Kawhi is, if it's just stagnant Kawhi high pick and roll every game, the Warriors can limit them just enough to win. But when Toronto plays like that and everyone's involved in ways that change, you know, Siakam's the screener, then he's the ball handler, the slips,
right.
They're really hard to guard.
Exactly. And that's the thing that we talk so much about, the way you have to, with great players, you have to throw different looks at them. Okay, the way to counter that, with regards, especially with the way they want to guard Kawhi, when you're constantly putting them in different positions, all of a sudden, especially with new personnel and with guys that aren't used to playing in certain roles, especially with Klay not there, that's the way you would want to play situations like that. And I kind of feel like, you know, you're obviously going to have your isolations and your stagnant play from time to time, but I'd be interested to see how much of that they're able to just keep for the next few games, because all of it is still going to be relatively new for the Warriors after the month that Durant has missed and Klay coming back after a game as well.
Breaking news interrupting the podcast here, Chris Herring. Tim Bontemps, a.k.a. Tim Bontemps, reporting that Kevon Looney could return to the finals after further testing on his whatever the name of this thing is that he has. Now, there was some buzz about that after the game last night. I was talking to a few Warriors and Warriors-adjacent people who said to me, just keep your ears open because Looney might play, or Looney might. There's like, Looney is now TBD. There's like a plot twist. It's on the table. He's been easily their best center.
No question.
Like, and so like, they just need to fill those center minutes somehow. And Draymond can't fill 48 of them because we don't know how Kevin and KD are going to look. Like, if Looney can just fill 18 competently, that changes their team. And, you know, we'll see. The other thing is if they go death lineup and it's rolling, Nick Nurse has been saving this Siakam at center card all season long. He barely used it in the regular season. And I don't think he wants to really use it. Ibaka in the second half last night was fantastic after a pretty blah first part of the series. Really, since Philly, he's been pretty blah. Mark is a very good player who's changed their team. So there's no like urgent need to play that.
And if you were to roll that lineup out with a healthy Warriors lineup, wouldn't that make the Warriors more likely to go to their death lineup too?
Maybe.
And maybe you, not that you need to avoid it, but if you don't have to use that lineup, why would you if it invites
But it's a switchy lineup. It's a good counter to that Warriors lineup.
Right.
There's no big behemoth center for them to exploit and run off the floor. And the way Van Vliet has played, he's just got to be on the floor a lot. And Kyle and Kawhi obviously have to be on the floor a lot. And so you're now making a choice of like Danny Green or big. And that's a way of getting all those guys on the floor at the same time.
I've been thinking about that. It's been really good to see Danny Green hitting his shots. Part of me was wondering, like, if we see what happened last series happen again, where Green on some level becomes unplayable because of his offense, if he's just not able to hit shots. On some level, yeah, you run out of people to guard all the Warriors' wings if they're healthy.
And it does appear, to your point, that I think we just have to assume now that Anunoby is not going to play because he's been healthy and active.
It would be tough to throw him in there now.
It looks like they've just made a decision. Now, that could change, but it looks like they've made a decision. Like, it's too much.
And at times you see that. I mean, Cousins is a star, and we're watching him kind of struggle just to get fully back into the mix, or at least within the role that he needs to play at different times. What I've kept thinking would have been interesting, and now I think it's a moot point because Green has shot so well, or, you know, games one, game three. Van Vliet, if you needed to, he essentially can play with your starters, and it's crazy to think that, like, the best Steph stopper, and I don't really know if there's anyone that totally stops him, but it's very clear that Van Vliet gums stuff up in a way that can make Steph uncomfortable or just deny him the ball. That the best stopper is someone that you bring off your bench. That's so unusual. I kind of feel like
and a little super, guy.
A little guy, but really stout, really strong. And I, it was so weird because I wish after you saw game one and a continuation of what had happened in the regular season and the matchup that he played against Steph, I wish I'd made a bigger deal out of it in the preview I've wrote. I definitely mentioned that Van Vliet had way more success than anybody else on their team at guarding Steph, but part of me didn't fully believe, you know, the numbers that I was seeing, even when I watched the film of it. I'm like, okay, it's clear he definitely pushes up on Steph more. He runs through screens well. But, like, you know, at some point over the series, Steph is really going to get him. At some point, he'll just break out of it.
And by the way, Nick Nurse starting him in the second half, what were they up at halftime?
It was like 8. It was very much like game.
It was 60-52.
Yeah, it was.
So my math skills say that that's an 8-point deficit. You're correct.
So it was like game 2. It was like game 2 in the sense that it felt like the Raptors had a chance to really go in with a big lead, and then the Warriors cut into it just enough. You remember that foul? I think was it Lowry's foul? That it wasn't a 3-point foul that Steph got, but they got him. I don't know. There were just ways that the Warriors were able to cut into the lead.
They finagled.
Did
a lot of finagling.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you're up 8 at half. Danny Green's making shots. That's kind of a ballsy move to be like, you know what, we're going to start Fred VanVleet. Like, there's no, you rarely see coaches do that kind of thing from a position of strength. You just,
I love that this dude thinks differently. I love it.
You normally just don't see that until we're down 10, it's desperation time, Danny Green has missed 18 straight threes.
And Van Vliet, to your point, he hit a couple of really big shots late. He wasn't, if I'm remembering correctly, I don't have their stats by half, I don't think he shot particularly well. I don't even feel like he took that many shots in the first half. So it wasn't.
He was 4 of 8 for the game, but.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of that was the second half. So I could be wrong on that. I'll have to go back and look, but. It would have, like you said, Danny Green was shooting pretty well. Van Vliet, to my knowledge, or at least what I remember from having watched it a couple times, he definitely wasn't on fire in the first half, and I think most of his success came in the second half on offense. So based on that, like you said, it's a gutsy move. I really, you know, there were people that were telling me, you know, Nick Nurse is not any different than Dwayne Casey. And I think we're still finding exactly what ways he's different, but you can't use the last couple weeks between the turnaround that they made against Milwaukee in that series and the fact that he said, okay, we're just going to put Kawhi on Giannis at this point. We have to do this. Maybe that was out of desperation after a 2-0 deficit. But between that, between the box and one defense on Steph, which, I mean, if you want to call that sort of thing obvious, I don't know who would because we don't ever see it. But even with Klay out, it changed the game. It gave them a chance to win a game that they really were out of at that point. And now you're looking at stuff like that. When you have the lead, you're trying different stuff and doing different things that aren't totally obvious. I love kind of how creative and outside the box he's been.
Yeah, he's done things that I didn't expect. Like I wrote in my piece yesterday, like they're not switching as much as I thought they would. And they switched more last night. They switched much more off-ball stuff for Steph than they had in prior games. I think Nick's a good coach. I don't think there's any question about that. And I think I've said this before, I think he's managed the season really well. I think there's a certain calm about him too that the players like and respond to. Like there's never a frenzy. There's never a sense of panic. He's always like, you know, we're just gonna like when Van Vliet was slumping, there were all these calls to play Lin and you can't play Powell and Van Vliet and Ibaka together. He's like, you know what? We've rolled with these guys. If we get enough games, those guys are better than the other guys that are behind them. Like they're playing because they're better. And like, I think there's just a certain sense of calm. It's not quite like Brad Stevens level calm, but I do think players have told me some players, like they respond to that. When you see your coach over there yelling and screaming and panicking, it kind of unnerves you a little bit. And Nick's done a good job. The Steph Curry game is going to be lost to history. You can already feel happening. 47-8-7 on 14 of 31 shooting, 6 of 14 from 3. I just thought it was, his level of aggression was like he was just roasting dudes off the dribble. It's
fun as hell to watch.
And like, you know, there was one play where Draymond was coming up to set a screen for him and he caught Kyle Lowry just leaning a little bit towards the pick. He's like, oh, I'm gone. Crossover, drawn foul. The threes he was putting up in transition, like with two guys around him, And you just, you rarely see him play, like, you remember that hesitation dribble he hit Kawhi with and drew a non-shooting foul? Like, we just haven't, he hasn't had to play that way. And he just kind of came out and was like, I might have to score 50. So here we go. It was one of the best performances of his career, and they lost. So
he would have had 50 if the game had been tighter and he needed to play, I think. I mean, he finished with the, what was it, 47?
47.
So I saw a stat that, credit to the Stats and Info Group at ESPN. I think Steph had 43 somewhere, and they were like 43% of their points last night. Of the last 10 postseasons, I think there have been like six or seven guys or six or seven performances where someone's done that in a game and all seven have lost. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So LeBron is responsible for a couple of them against these Warriors, I think.
Game one last year for sure.
Definitely right? Game one last year. So, I mean, it might be more circumstantial. I mean, Cleveland should have probably won game one last year, you know, from the way that that unfolded and a really, you know, bizarre game one because of the J.R. Smith thing. But still, I think there is something to that, the idea that, you know, and probably speaks to what Nick Nurse was doing with the box and one, although they were behind at the time, is that if you only have to really focus on shutting down one guy, one, that plays into the hands of the other team, and two, Steph, for as great a passer as he is and playmaker as he is, if other guys can't knock down shots, that's why the Quinn Cook step back kind of stood out so much. I think they only made something like two shots off the dribble that weren't Steph's. And so there's just no one really who can create. You can look at Draymond as a playmaker, but if Draymond, you know, is passing to people that can't shoot, it's going to be a slog of an offense. And so there just wasn't much there. But Steph, I mean, it is incredibly fun. And I think a lot of us have seen that in games where Durant doesn't play. It's always really fun to watch him when he just gets a chance to go off on his own. It's really fun to watch Durant when he gets a chance to go off on his own when Steph doesn't play. It doesn't make them a better team, but it's fun to watch. And so it's weird to have like a fun game to watch in the finals where you're like, man, this is entertaining to watch. But also, you know, it's the finals and they need to get this game. So it's not just for kicks and giggles. I'll use that word instead.
Yeah, thank you, because we don't have a producer listening in to edit the beeps. I've tried to.
And you almost threw in an ad without needing to.
Yeah, I don't have to read any ads today.
Good stuff.
So here's a Steph Curry stat for you. Here are his last 5 years of isolation scoring, according to our friends at Second Spectrum. This year, 1.08 points per isolation, fifth in the league. Last year, 1.01, 21st. 2 years ago, 1.12, second. 15-16, 1.06, fifth. 14-15, 0.99, 13th. Steph is an amazing isolation player. Amazing. And we don't think of him that way because that's not how they play. And there's like, it's such an interesting, sort of yin and yang with point guards, because we don't think of them as isolation players. But there are some times in the playoffs where the team defenses you're facing are so good. Like, I thought about this with Dame a lot. Like, that, like, if Fred VanVleet is chasing Curry around, like, he can't guard Curry one-on-one. We just don't think of Steph that way. He is an extraordinary James Harden level one-on-one scorer. Now, he couldn't take the pounding that James Harden
takes. Wouldn't want him to.
But there are, I just feel like I thought this about Kyrie. Like, there are just times in the playoffs where it actually might be better to just let your stud point guard just go. Just see what you get. Like, get in the lane. He'll get a floater. Like, and he's an extraordinary isolation player. And I looked up those numbers today because it was fun to see him be like, I just got to score. Like, I'm going to fake toward the pick. I'm going to go the other way. And I just got to score. And he can do it.
He's completely capable. Steph, I just feel like, I mean, we watched him do it. We watched him just kind of burn a couple people with the dribble, which he can do. He can get around people. I just feel like even when you think about how easy it would be to just say, okay, we're throwing a second, third person at him. We're going to make him go through all this help level defense. When guys around him can't hit shots, I mean, that's why they lost. Between that and the defense, we said when you're getting 47 out of Steph, but then you're giving up more than 120 on the other side. That's what it turns into. But like I said, it's always been fun to watch the guy play offense. I don't know. I'm at a point. I understand the idea that people don't see him as the best player in the world because of what he may not be able to do on the other side of the ball. But in terms of his offensive skill and kind of how clearly, and you know, oh, Harden is the best offensive player in the world. Durant is the best offensive player in the world. LeBron, Steph has to be in that conversation, because when you talk about why he's not the best player in the world, to me, I feel like you have to point more at the lack of versatility that he has on defense compared to the other guys. It's not what he can't do on offense.
It is so interesting, because Ben Cohen wrote that piece for the Wall Street Journal about his plus minus over the last 5 years. And we've all known this, that the Warriors with him on the, now it's hard to he's on the floor with Draymond a lot. So Draymond's like second in those rankings, but like there's just something he's doing, and it's obvious what it is, that has power that is not being captured by more traditional metrics, and it's such an overwhelming power that it turns them into a super team regardless of what his alleged defensive limitations are. Mm-hmm. Now, like, you just look at what Kawhi did to Giannis. I mean, like, Steph can't do that. You can't weaponize Steph that way on the other end of the floor, and it's become fashionable, and I think correct to say that on the superstar level, offense is more important than defense, because you can affect every single possession on offense and you can't on defense, because maybe they don't involve you in all that. But I've changed my belief over the last 4 or 5 years that it's that when you're evaluating individual players like that, defense is half the game. That's what I used to believe.
60-40.
It's not quite that, but I think it's closer to half the game than some other people would suggest, because you look at what, like, you know who impacted every defensive possession? Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
In the conference finals. He impacted every single defensive possession.
And that was why you
possession.
Said you, that he would have been your MVP a couple of years ago, because, for that reason. Yeah.
And so it is possible. And like, Steph just can't do that. But to me, the best offensive player in the NBA is Steph or LeBron. Like, above Harden, above whoever else you want to throw in there, above Giannis, like, it's Steph or the LeBron we saw before last season in Los Angeles. Those are the two best offensive players. And am I forgetting someone? I'm not sure anyone else belongs in the conversation.
No, I mean, anybody who's putting Kawhi in that conversation, it's because of his all-around game. And then, like I said, I feel like Kawhi.
I'm just talking to Durant.
No,
Durant's the one we're forgetting.
Yeah,
Durant's
for sure.
The one we're forgetting.
And I feel like Durant is different. And I mean, I kind of feel like from the way we're talking about it, when you talk about Harden and you talk about Durant, you're talking about guys that can just toast you in isolation. They can pass the ball. I think Harden is a top three, top four, top five passer in the league. So he's clearly capable of passing it.
And Harden is the fourth guy in the conversation. I don't want to disparage Harden. He's an unbelievable offensive player. Off the ball, I think we've seen, like, these reports that there was tension between Chris and James toward the end of that Golden State series, and now Houston is undergoing some organizational trauma. As brilliant as Harden is, and as much as this is, let's make it a four-man conversation for best offensive player in the league, right? I think there is a cost. There is a unquantifiable cost to, I need the ball all the time.
Right.
And when I don't have it, I'm just standing there. And maybe it's a cost that is irrelevant because you surround him with the kind of players who don't care that they just have to stand in the corner. But I do think there is some cultural cost to that, and a cultural benefit to having a guy like Steph who's going to do what you ask him to do and move without the ball. And like, you know, Steph had this play last night where he just like burrowed into Fred VanVleet's chest and like got him on his back, got Fred VanVleet on his back and cut inside. Draymond hit him, help came. He dropped off to Bogut for a layup. It's like, just through sheer force of will, he created a layup for Andrew Bogut.
There were three or four plays like that. I actually took note of several of them, just going back through the play by play and watching the film. So many plays, and aside from the times that he drags two people with him.
Oh, from all that.
There's
which is
so
all
many
the
plays
time.
Like that. Aside from the fact that he's probably the best off-ball screener, not when he's being screened for, but when he's like as a guard.
Yeah, everyone's making fun of the screen assist stat. Like, oh,
that's,
screen assist.
No, that's a real stat.
There's this whole thing now that's like, oh, Steph has all this gravity. Everyone's always bringing up the gravity. I'm like,
no.
Yeah, you know why? Because it's a real thing. So Steph should score more points. If we're going to laud him as this great offensive player, like, why did he only score 25 points? We're all going to talk about his gravity. Well, the gravity is like, that's the whole thing.
I didn't realize that the screen assist was being made fun of, because now I want to like fight back.
People make fun of it because it's like, Steph has an average like scoring and assist game. And then the Steph acolytes are like, but look, he led the game in screen assists. And, right. and there's a pushback of like, no, the screen assist is real.
He literally, so I went back, I actually wrote a story, I can't remember what his headline, like the beautiful, chaos of the Warriors offense or something like that, where I was talking about how this team relies less on the traditional screen and roll than any team in the league. They used off-ball screens more than any team in the league, and Clay is kind of the big reason as to why. But in the midst of all that, Steph, that season, I think that I wrote the story, I think it was 2016-17, Steph led the league among guards and screen assists. And I mean, you go back and you watch some of the videos I plugged in the story, he's creating looks for like the most random people that I feel like now that they're not in the Warriors anymore, we literally never talk about, but creating backdoor layups where no one's within a 10-foot radius because everyone, so two and three people are worried about Steph getting out to the three-point line that they just leave people wide open for layups. So, I mean, you don't have players in the league like that, and that's the stuff that you miss and why I think we do have the kind of never-ending debate about Steph and who's more valuable to that team or who's the best player and is there a difference between those two things. The value of having Steph there is that guys literally forget what they're doing defensively and they will kind of interrupt what normal defensive protocol should be to go out and make sure that Steph doesn't get an open look, and in the process of doing it, will allow a 2-foot shot to someone who, you know, who shouldn't have been anywhere near the basket.
That was a magical game last night. It will get lost to history because they lost, and they never really got within like 7. It was never like a suspenseful game.
I don't know that they ever had it within 7.
It was a magical performance by Steph. Is there anything else you want to talk about as we head to game 4? Are you just sort of in wait and see, like who's going to play mode?
I mean, yeah, I assume that Clay will be back. I mean, I'm looking forward to exactly what you said. It should be fun. I think that's what everyone kind of got excited for in the Rockets series. It's just like, we know this team can push them. So now even if you didn't think that the Raptors could, now you've seen that they can. No, they haven't been at full strength, the Warriors, but now that you assume they will be, they have, like you said, they have a little bit of wiggle room here, but they lose one more, they don't. And so that's kind of that. Those are pretty strong odds at this point. I mean, it would be fair to think that the Raptors should win this series based on the fact that they've got two more at home. Clay will be coming off an injury. Durant will be coming off a long-term injury. It'll be fun.
You would think the Warriors would win game 4. It's just hard to imagine them losing both games here with Clay and KD coming back. You would think we're going back 2-2. To the East Coast, right? I mean,
if they don't, man. I mean, yeah, I would. Here's my only thing. Because the other thing too, and then just a quick aside, I don't think anyone would say the Raptors blew game 2 at all. I mean, I think they had opportunities there. Clay left. They obviously made the big comeback there toward the end. They didn't quite get it done. They made some mistakes that they would kick themselves for later. But if they had, it makes me wonder if Clay would have sat out game 3. It makes me wonder if Durant even would have sat out game 3 if they felt like we really need to get this one because we can't fall behind 3-0.
Agreed. I think if they won last night, I think you might see.
You'd see guys
both
sit
of
out again. And I think that's what yesterday
might,
was.
To be clear. Might.
Right. And so that's my thing is that I think they probably sat Clay out. You know, and Kerr was pretty candid about it. He said, look, if we have any concern that he might re-injure it or it might get worse, we're not going to play him. He said that and he was open about it, but I feel like even if they knew there was a risk, you would have played him, if they had been down 2-0. And now that if they're up 2-1, I think you would see him sit out again. So this game is, I won't say it's everything. They can win 3 straight games, but
it would almost be more entertaining if they lost and they had to come out guns blazing.
It won't almost
be
more entertaining. It will be more entertaining if that happens. Now it'll be brutal for them, and I feel like we
have Toronto going home with a chance to win the title against the whatever closest approximation to full strength Warriors that can happen right now.
Can you imagine?
Would be insane.
I've been planning all my stories for the rest of the series. I feel like they're all kind of leaning more toward, like, about Toronto. And I remember talking to my editors before I came out here, and I'm like, well, you know, hopefully Golden State doesn't necessarily win the next 2, because then I've got to run all my Toronto stuff and rush it just before the series is over. The idea of them going back up 3-1 to Toronto with that crowd would be something. People were asking me, what was the crowd like last night? I felt like it was a really, maybe not nervous crowd, but it wasn't like an Oracle crowd like I'm used to hearing, because they were behind the whole time and they were never within that range where it felt like they were right there.
But every time they got to 7 or 8, the crowd like kept egging them on. Like
they egged them on, yeah. But then Danny Green hits a three. Then, you know, Kawhi, there was a stretch there where you thought that they were still within striking distance. And then I think the Raptors scored on five straight possessions there from like the 7.5 minute mark to like the 5 minute mark. And it was all Lowry and Kawhi. One of those two.
Lowry scoring played a wonderful game.
That was a really good, and I think you almost needed a game like that to counter what Steph was doing. The fact that you had a couple of, all five of the starters had 15, I think, which the last time that happened, it's crazy. The last time that happened was the Spurs at some point, during their run.
Of course it was.
But it's so crazy that in game two, you had the Warriors have every basket assisted in the second half, first time since the Spurs. And then in game three, you have the Raptors do something that hasn't been done since the Spurs.
Meanwhile, I'm still not over the Spurs just not fouling in game seven against Denver. I'm still like, not like, like here we are talking about how the Spurs are trendsetters and they're so brilliant all these records go back to the Spurs and they were just like.
That was befuddling as hell.
Just yelling at each other. And nobody fouled.
I was so, it was one of those moments where you're watching the game and you're like, am I missing something or is there something that I don't know about? Do all of them have five fouls and they're all afraid to foul out? It was pretty crazy. And then you watch the replay and you see Pop trying to get him to and then just this look of resignation.
It was almost like, you know what? We're not going to win the championship this year. Let's just call it a day. Let's get DeJounte Murray back. Let's call it a day. Let's get healthy for
next
season.
I'm looking forward to seeing DeJounte Murray back. Him and Derek White will be fun.
All right. Let's head over to Oracle Arena and go to practice. And one of our last trips that we're going to make to Oakland to watch NBA stuff. And we're not going to be going there next year. So.
We might not be coming back there this year, depending on what Toronto does.
I would be
really surprised if that happens.
I am expecting a Warriors win tomorrow. I'm expecting them to respond and obviously have more bodies. I will be very surprised if they lose tomorrow. Now, Toronto's really good. I'm just saying, these are the Warriors. They have earned the benefit of the doubt. They've reached a point where I won't pick against them in a series until they lose, so I'll never be ahead of it. But I'm expecting them to win tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. They're going to come out. You know the effort is not going to be a question at that point. And like I said, I just think even getting Klay back helps fix your rotations enough. If you get him and Durant back, all of a sudden you're not left playing guys that you don't want to play. And I feel like that literally was an issue last
game. Obviously that changes if Klay and KD get out on the floor and 5 minutes into the game, they're like, you know what, we can't go. Like this, the pain is too much. Then obviously
that was the benefit of sitting Klay that one game.
Yeah. If they can go and be 85% or 80% or whatever of themselves, I would expect the Warriors to win.
Yeah.
So we will see. We're going to go to Oakland now. Chris Herron, you can read all of his stuff at 538.com, the goofy stuff and the detailed X's and O's stuff. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me as always, man.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.